Hello, and welcome to Monumental, where we sit down with entrepreneurs, leaders, visionaries, and big thinkers making monumental change. Here's your host, Evan Holliday.
Welcome back to another episode of Monumental. I'm your host, Evan Holliday, and today's guest comes all the way to us from Hawaii. Today's guest is Lane Kawaoka. Lane is a co-owner at MFPE Investments, where they own and control over 2,100 units, and where he is responsible for finding investment opportunities, analysis, and marketing. Lane works as an engineer full-time and has real-world experience in working as a project manager for over $230 million of capital construction projects in both the public and private sector. Working as a high-paid professional in corporate America and frustrated by the traditional wealth-building dogma, Lane was compelled to inspire and mentor other professionals via his top-rated podcast at SimplePassiveCashflow.com. In today's episode, we talk about how he went from being brainwashed into quote-unquote the American dream of getting the corporate job and getting a house to owning a whole portfolio of turnkey rentals. Granted, all over the country, he was in Seattle. That's a crazy story. And now he owns and invests in over 2,100 units of multifamily and different types of housing. So we'll also talk about how he built a massive group of like-minded investors and why he educates others on gaining simple passive cash flow. So if you're listening right now, I just want to thank you for listening to Monumental, and also everyone out there that has left us reviews on iTunes. That really means a lot to us, and that really helps spread the word about Monumental. So we appreciate all of the love and support. So with that, let's jump right into the show. Lane, great to have you on the show.
Hey, thanks for having me, Evan.
Yes. How are you doing today?
Sun is out and guns are out because it's sunny every day in Hawaii.
I love it. Yes, we'll have to dive into Hawaii a little bit. But let's first jump right into getting into your background and before you got started investing in real estate.
Yeah, so it's kind of a boring story. I went to school. Parents always told me to go study hard, get a good job. So I went to University of Washington for engineering school. Still kind of brainwashed at that stage, and I went to work as a construction manager my first few years. And I was saving, trying to save up all my money to go buy a primary residence, because that's what we're all told to do, right? Get on that escalator of wealth building and buying your own primary residence. But because I was a construction manager and we traveled all the time for work, I was never home. So I would leave work on like Sunday, catch a flight, come back Friday evening. So I was only home at that place one day a week. So I just decided one day, well, let me try to rent this thing out. So I got called up an old landlord, and I was like, all right, I don't know what the property manager does, but can you run this thing for me? And that's what she did. And that was kind of the start of the madness.
And then from there, was there something that kind of led into the you kind of falling in love with real estate?
Yeah, I mean, it was just straight money, right? Like, I mean, I bought a $360,000 Class A property in Seattle. This was back in 2009. The rent for that was $2,200 a month. Definitely not the kind of rental you want, right? Because it didn't even meet the 1% rent to value rule.
Right.
The mortgage was $1,600 a month. So as far as I was concerned, like a young 21-year-old kid, 22-year-old kid, it was $2,200 minus the mortgage and paying the property manager. And I had a few hundred bucks of cash flow there. And I was like, wow, I just got to keep doing this again and again and again. You know, this is just beer money. And yeah. About the same time, I didn't like my job. I had some pretty bad bosses and they kind of treated us like dirt. So that was the whole combination of that. You know, that was kind of like my ticket out of the day job. That was kind of where the motivation came. And then I started to binging on all the podcasts and books, and, you know, finally read that Rich Dad, Poor Dad book, which I kind of thought of anyway. And yeah, it was kind of just slowly building one rental after another was kind of the next step.
It's funny you say that. I feel like most people I talk to or have on the podcast, they say that it was because of Rich Dad Poor Dad that they got into real estate, but you kind of beat it to the punch. You got into real estate and then read the book, but that helped you even further open up your eyes to say, hey, real estate's got something going on.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I knew of that book because the guy was from Hawaii and everybody talks about, you know, the same stuff. You know, if someone's a slurry from Hawaii, then everybody in Hawaii knows about it.
So it's a small place.
I didn't really read it until I was like 1 year managing my own rental. And I was like, it's all in one book, right?
Yeah.
I guess it's kind of the Bible of like not working for the man forever and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, you're exactly right. I've had that book mentioned quite often on the podcast. So you had that first rental, you had it cash flowing a few hundred dollars. Was there kind of like you said where you're like, hey, I could keep doing this, and how long did it take to get into your next deal?
Yeah, so I was making like 80 grand a year as an engineer. And the cool thing at the time, because I was single and I was living on the company dollar, the whole time, you know, living in hotels, I didn't have any living expenses. I mean, there'd be some weeks where I would like kind of make it a game where I would just spend like $100 a week, just like on Saturday night. Like it was kind of weird like that. And nevertheless, I was able to save like 50 grand a year or something like that.
Yeah.
In a matter of a couple of years, I was ready to go buy another property. This time, a duplex in West Seattle. Not as nice place. And, you know, because I was aware of this whole, you know, you don't buy A-class rentals. You go for more cash flow. And I was like, well, I don't want to go to South Seattle and get shot. I'm going to try a B-class rental with very light rehab. You know, it was like $5,000 of rehab. So it was, I knew where I was going, but I was kind of still wanted to ease into it. So yeah, I picked up that rental, a duplex a few years later, and then 2012 happened. And that was sort of the time when the market was kind of coming back up. And I was like, what the heck? Like I can't cash flow, you know, like,
yeah.
You know, a lot of California investors or Seattle investors realize this, that, hey, bro, you're just not going to be able to find cash flow in primary markets, or you got to go to the secondary and tertiary markets. So I had heard about this turnkey rental thing about buying out of state, sight unseen. And I followed a bunch of steps that I read about, and I met a few people that helped me. And, you know, that's why I kind of like to help out the guys getting those turnkey rentals or just that first out of state rental, because it's kind of daunting. But I do remember talking to a couple people, and one guy was like a cop. I don't know who it was, but he was kind of like, look, man, it's kind of easy. I can do it. You can do it. And I was like, all right, I'm going to do it. I'm going to buy this $70,000 Birmingham property. And it worked, you know, it worked like magic, like $875 every month. And then I was sold. So I sold those two Seattle properties and did a 1031 exchange for 9 properties out of state. And that's how I kind of vaulted the double digits pretty quickly.
That's a interesting story, going from two Class A properties in Seattle in your backyard to realizing that, hey, there's better cash flow in maybe Class B or Class C investments and also turnkey investments. And looking at a state and 1031 exchanging, using that equity from the sale and putting that right into multiple, you said what, 10 plus units?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think looking back, I was kind of, man, I was drinking the turnkey rental Kool-Aid back then. I was like, you can get 10 Fannie Freddie loans in your name, and then you get 10 in your spouse's name. Now you're rolling with 20.
Yeah.
You know, and I was like, I got 5 in Atlanta, 4 in Birmingham, 1 in Indianapolis, and I was going to get some more in Indianapolis. But then I realized kind of quickly, I was like, uh-oh, this is kind of a pain in the butt, because with 10, 11 rentals at the time, I was getting like an eviction or two every year. and some big thing that happened every quarter, which was, you know, pretty, not that bad, right? I mean, I had three property managers and I was doing this all remotely, but I realized that I was just getting cash flow like a measly $3,000 a month. I mean, no shabby thing, right? But that wasn't going to replace my engineering salary.
Right.
So, and then I realized, well, I'm going to need 30 of these. So if you just do the math to do, you know, $10,000 passive a month, I'm going to have almost six evictions every year. And definitely a big catastrophe happening every few weeks. And I was like, whoa, this is not the way to go. So I started to look into apartment buildings, which is the logical progression back in 2015 and 16.
So looking back, would you do it differently or still go down the same path where you learned as you went?
If I would have done it differently, I might have just bought a few 3 to 5 out-of-state rentals and then gone into the big stuff. But everybody's situation is different. And I talk to so many people and I try and help them along. Because it's mostly a combination of how much net worth you have and how much money you're able to put away in the bank, right? So like if you're a doctor or a lawyer, a lot of these guys, they'll be able to put away 50, 100 grand a year in savings. No brainer. They should probably just skip over the whole single family home thing. Although a lot of guys who work with me, they like to, you know, Lane, let's go get one. Teach me how to get one. So they at least understand it. And it's kind of funny, you know, high paid professionals, they're sort of a glutton for punishment. This is why there are such high paid professions, because they work, they always like to do it the hard way. Quote unquote, the right way, I guess. I don't know.
Right. They want to learn themselves.
Right. Right. And I think if the big stuff, if you're going to do it, I think you got to have a certain net worth level too. I mean, just think about it. If you got to be a passive and you're putting 50 grand to each deal, there's no way you can do it if your net worth is $200,000, $300,000, or even $400,000. You don't have enough money. No syndicator should take your money.
Right.
If you're, I don't want to say broke, but not even close to being accredited status. But then if you want to be an operator, I mean, a lot of the deals these days, you need to put down hard money, and that's 100 G's plus or minus 50 or 100 right there. And, you know, that's not chump change. I mean, I think of people should do it the prudent way and slowly build up their portfolio with cash flow first. Then once you get good at it, then kind of go take some swings, especially when you're bringing in other people's money.
Right. So you're thinking, your advice to others that are getting into it now is, you know, everybody's situation is different, but, you know, learn the business with some smaller rentals, get your cash flow up, and then work your way up to larger multifamily units, and then potentially get into, if you want to keep going, take that next step like you did and get into larger multifamily.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's so clearly and elegantly you said that.
Right.
You're owning what they want to say. So I made a freaking graph that says if your net worth is this and you're able to save this much money and you're below this line, like this is what you should do, right? It's a combination of those two factors. And I made this graph with all this stuff because people don't get it. And they'll be like, no, I'm the one, 10X. Yeah. You know, like that's what most people think. Or at least the ones that call me, I guess. I don't know. Maybe I just attract that kind of person.
I think it's the 10X license plate behind you. Yeah, I see. No, that's funny. No, that's honestly, that's a good point. You know, people need to realize their financial situation maybe should in some ways dictate where they should be looking for deals. I don't think that should limit where they look, but they should also know that if they're going to get into bigger deals, they need partners that have done it before or have the net worth.
Right. I mean, when I look to invest with somebody, number one, I like to work with professionals. Number one reason why they're sort of proven, they're pre-selected people. They're not some, not saying money isn't everything, but if you haven't really worked at building a career or And I'm not saying that college is anything either, but it shows that you at least spent some time trying to work towards something. Number two, there's some technical expertise by getting, you know, working with a professional. They have some sort of, whether they're engineer or accountant, even a doctor, dentist, right? It's not really any kind of technical skill that carries over, but maybe they're good at business, but at least they have the ability to grind at it. And then number three, I don't like working with people who don't have to worry about putting food on the table. Because when times get tough, they're going to, I should hope they're going to put me, the limited partner, on the side. Right? And they should pick right. their family. I mean, it's nice that they have a W-2 day job coming in, or at least they came from a W-2 job and transitioned over slowly. That's just what I look for when I look for a sponsor to go in with.
Right. So what was your path into getting into multifamily?
So I went and joined an apartment mentoring group because I was like, well, I'm like 20. I think I was late 30s at the time. And I was like, well, I'm going to be doing this for quite a while. And I guess I'm pretty good at this, I guess. I mean, I'm going to keep continuing the progression. So I'm going to get the mentorship. First time I paid money for mentorship program, because at first I was always YouTube and Google and podcasts was my
right. way. What made you want to pay for it? And
I think I saw the value in terms of like multifamily is a team sport. You literally need other people to go sign on your debt to get the deal done. You're not going to do that sitting at home playing on forums or Facebook yep. groups. It's just not going to happen. And part of it was like I wanted to kind of get to that next level, and I saw it as a place I needed to push. So, you know, the saying pay to play is very true. To do this. So that's what I did. And I spent probably about a year to 18 months, like, you know, doing everything that they tell you to do, right? Go look for deals.
Right.
Talk to these people, talk to the broker, analyze all these deals. I must have analyzed like 100, 150 deals in that time. And it was a complete waste of time because none of those made sense. And this is back in 2016. And I realized I didn't like to do the acquisition side. Like, I didn't like to butter up brokers. I didn't like to take Dallas Mavericks game because it was hard because I was living in Seattle at the time. And now when I live in Hawaii, that's impossible. And then
right.
about a year into it, banging my head against the wall, me and my partner were like, okay, we're not getting anywhere because we're just a couple of Joes with, you know, 20-something properties, single-family home type, residential, and we weren't getting anywhere. And then...
Right.
We're like, all right. We got some cash. We got to go into a deal as a passive, right? Because we got to do something. Maybe
yeah.
put this on a resume. We'll look cooler, and people will give us deals. So that's what we did.
And and it gives you experience from the investor's side of a deal.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, kind of. I mean, you're getting the outside of the curtain look at it, but yeah, you fool a lot of people.
You see how they treat the investors, right?
Right. Right. But then realized, I was like, hey, you know, why would I want to take on all this time and effort, come home every day, grind for a few hours after going to my day job when my net worth was already at a place where I could just invest it, you know, say like 15% a year, and I'll be totally where I want to be financially independent very soon. So that's when I kind of made that mental shift to, you know, you could say I gave up, but I was like, well, I mean, screw it, I'll just keep working my day job. And my day job got easier and easier because I switched from private to more public sector jobs. People got a lot more nicer. The job got better. I mean, pretty sweet, sweet gig I got now. So that's what I'm up to these days, just kind of going into deals. I don't spend my time talking to brokers. I spend my time hunting deal hunters. So if there's operators out there, I'm looking for operators and I'm hunting them. I'm the deal hunter, if that's
not- I'm writing that down because I love that term. I'm you're hunting deal hunters.
I'm like the movie Solo. You know when those guys went on and got whatever the medical, I don't know what they got. They were rushing around. And the other guys were just up at camp drinking beers, and they just, when the protagonist brought it back to the camp, they just ambushed them. That's what I kind of do. Just wait for
it. That's a good way of looking at it. I like that. So, so you mentioned you don't like the acquisition side, you know, meeting with brokers, you know, kind of whining and dining and certain things. What kind of brought out your strengths and weaknesses? Like, if you didn't like to do that, what do you do? What do you like to do?
I don't really like real estate too much. I like the money that it makes and the lifestyle it creates. And I tell this right. a lot to my investors, like, look, if you're able to put away 20, 50 grand a year into even stocks, look, you're going to be financially free in very near future. A lot of these guys are like within a few years, and there are a lot of them are under the age of 45. And so the same, you know, begin with the end in mind comes. So that's why I was living in Seattle at a higher paid job, and I was like, screw it. I'm going to start practicing what I preach. I'm going to move back to Hawaii, take a lower pay cut, and do what I want to do now. Because I was on track investing. It's not like I was going to go screw off. I was actively investing in good deals, and I was on track. It was just a math equation, right?
Right. So you really enjoyed the ability that real estate brings by investing in it. It brings you the lifestyle you want and the financial freedom.
Right, right. I mean, I think if I were to say I do like something, I do like when somebody contacts me out of the blue and who I have a personal relationship with and says, hey, man, I got this deal that I'm working on. What do you think about it? And it's not like the dude with that cap behind me this way, that 506 cap, like, oh, I got a deal. You know, I don't even know how to analyze it, but it's a deal. Like, no, like someone who's a good operator, and then they float it to me, and I'm like, oh, this looks pretty good. You know, I'm gonna go fly up there and check it out. You know, I think that's kind of cool. It's kind of like hunting, I guess. I never went hunting, but I imagine it's sort of.
So you like the kind of the art of good deals coming through and being able to work with that operator, that good operator, and being able to partner with them.
Right, right. Because now I'm at the point where I've kind of invested a lot of my money in. So, but still, as the cash flow comes out, as I keep making money, I still have an allowance to go and invest in more deals. So right. I get to be a little selective. So I'm coming at it from like an abundance mindset. I can kind of, it's fun because food is coming on the table regardless.
Right. So what about, I saw you have the crowdfund Aloha. Is that where you're bringing in other investors to invest in these deals? How does that work?
Oh, so I have like simple passive cash flow. That was like the wonky, hey, follow me, buy these turnkey rentals. And it's kind of, the story has kind of transitioned over the years to, you know, buying these bigger stuff, apartments, mobile home parks, self-storage, all kinds of stuff. And I realized that some people don't like the crudeness or like the keeping it real of simple passive cash flow. That is. So crowdfund Aloha is like the grown up version that you like, you know, like Evan, you like show your auntie this site, you know, like pay no attention to this simple passive cash flow lane character. But this crowdfund Aloha is like the grown up version with the proper blah, blah, blah with, I don't know how they make most websites these days, right? With icon and some garbage.
Interesting. Okay. That's not like it. I mean, that just sounds like branding to me. I mean, that's yeah. smart branding. It's making.
I mean, it's like that's the same. The party in the front, or yeah, business in the front, party in the back, like the
yeah.
haircut or whatever.
So now you've kind of piqued my interest. So tell me about this. What is it that's, that, like you said, is kind of rubs people off or rubs people the wrong way or something about simple passive?
I think people, when they think of their money, and I think most people, I have this conversation with a lot of my investors and friends, like, it's crazy. Like, people will talk about sex with their friends before they ever even talk about money, right? That's how taboo of a subject it is. And then here we are talking about simple passive cash flow, about money so intimately and so second nature that I think it puts a lot of people off. And some people can think of some of the topics that I talk about as very controversial. So the crowdfunding is kind of more the PC version of it.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I would think that, you know, people that are looking into real estate would find those discussions very enlightening, if nothing else. I mean, really just being able to learn from podcasts and, you know, kind of push the needle of their spectrum of knowledge on real estate.
I think there's two kinds of investors out there. There's people who don't have too much money and they are open-minded to that kind of edge. But I also think that people with money, they don't have to take chances. They're not going to take a chance on me who spells a lot of words wrong because I'm an engineer. Right. I probably should run the spell checker a lot more than I should, but that's just how people are. A lot of times there's like a good deal and people will find reasons to not invest in the deal just to stay in their comfort zone. Right. Like the other day, this guy was telling me, I was like, oh, you know, you didn't like the deal. How come you didn't invest? And he was like, well, I didn't like the reversion cap rate you guys use. I thought it was too high, you know? You guys were using 7%. And I was like, dude, like the reversion cap rate is supposed to be higher. You know, yeah. It's counterintuitive. What are you talking about? But it's just like people will sharpshoot themselves out of deal because they're afraid. And if I have to have a website that looks a little cleaner and uses proper English and spells correctly to get people out of corrupt Wall Street investments, then damn it, that's what I'm going to do.
Yeah.
You know?
Do what you got to do. I mean,
got to do what I got to do.
I think it makes a lot of sense in the sense that, you know, if you can, I mean, everybody kind of wants the same end result from real estate, right? It's the long-term wealth generation or some form of expanding their original investment, right? So if you're a smart investor, that's what you want. So I guess the end goal is the same for everybody, but it's just a matter of how you word it or how you message it to get people on board with that same goal in mind.
Right. I mean, so the packaging, right, is very.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense because I've even thought about, okay, well, you know, maybe you even make marketing different for different types of jobs, you know, people in different industries. Like you make a landing page for doctors, you make a landing page for dentists, you make a landing page for, you know, even more specifically like cardiologists, you know what I mean? Like if you can get specific with it, I think that makes a lot of sense as far as, you know, you're targeting into their more specific needs and wants. In this case, it's better language.
I've always tried to, like, when I try and create my lifestyle, I always wanted to make some kind of cool group of people where we all sort of invest it with each other, sing kumbaya, and where I can kind of be myself. And if you don't like me, then cool, you don't have to hang out with me. That was what my vision was when I kind of started this thing out. And when I started Simple Passive Cashflow a few years back, that was kind of one of the coolest things. Like I met a lot of neat friends, a lot of stronger friendships than I even had even when I first started, before real estate. And that's kind of been the motivation behind it all. It's just like meeting people that are like-minded that, and part of that is repelling people that aren't down with it.
Right. So actually,
we're all aligned, right? We all want people to, you know, invest in better deals outside of Wall Street, the better returns, more conservative, yada yada. And however you want to do it, you can do it.
Exactly. So that kind of brings up a good point is what originally got you started with Simple Passive Cash Flow and the podcast?
I was buying these, I had the couple rentals at the time, and then I was starting to buy these out-of-state rentals, and people just thought it was the most absurd thing to do. Buy properties that you'd never seen. You know, how do you know if it's still there? And I was like, well, you know, the bank kind of does the title report. I don't know what title is. But I was kind of fumbling through this whole thing by myself. And I realized I spent so much time and effort telling people what I was doing, and they would never do anything. So I recorded it because, I mean, I was always into podcasts back in the day. You know, all these kinds of like CrossFit or paleo podcasts back in like 2008. Right. Was a neat medium. And I don't have kids, so I was like, well, I'll probably forget a lot of this stuff, so I might as well just record it. But then like 6 months down the road, like, yeah, that was kind of when a lot of the friendships started to happen. People kind of found me, and then yeah, that's kind of been the neat thing.
And that's kind of what's kept you going with it today?
Yeah. I mean, there's definitely some models out there. I don't know if you've heard of like Mr. Money Mustache, like personal finance blogs, but I used to read all those kinds of things back in college when I 15 years ago or something like that. And like, man, I was at FinCon last year, and then Mr. Money Mustache was like on stage, and there were like some people crying because like they know this guy so well, and like what a huge impact he's making. I mean, his net worth is like barely $1 million or whatever. It's probably half now because he's getting a divorce. But, he's not rich, but look at the huge impact he's making now, right?
Right.
How much positive impact he is. And you know, I think that's something to aspire to for me personally, because I never wanted to be like a guy like where everybody knows. I'd rather be like a class Z celebrity is a phrase I like to use.
I like that. Class Z celebrity. So helping people out, but not the front page of the tabloids.
Right. But yeah, you know, a few people, you know, say, well, hey, we followed the stuff on buying a rental property out of state, and then now my wife doesn't have to work anymore, right? I was like, yeah. I told you so.
Yeah, as long as you follow what we got on the website.
Yeah.
No, it's powerful. I mean, that's why I do the podcast Monumental, and same reason, you know, you do your podcast and a lot of people do their podcast is really like just the impact you can have on other people. I've been doing this coming up on a year and have started to get more and more people reach out and say, hey, this one episode really, you know, touched me, or this one episode really got me going, got me thinking. Now I started my own website doing this, or started my blog, or, you know, it's just cool to hear people say that. They're like, hey, you inspired me to start my own podcast.
Right. And everybody kind of resonates with somebody a little bit different too.
Right. Yeah. I think we all kind of have our own message. We all have our own story, and we all have our own way of sharing things. So yeah. I think it helps to, you're right. I mean, people resonate differently with different people. And so I think everybody should be in some form or fashion kind of, you know, kind of giving back what they can to others.
Yeah. I was kind of, I had a conversation with my trainer just an hour ago. And we were saying, well, you know, most guys in the NBA, they're kind of broke. So the motivation is to stop being broke and buy their mom a house. There's a few guys that are like really rich when they get it, and they just want to be like best, right? It's kind of a power trip. But right. Once they get to that level, you know, it's very rare that they kind of propel and stay at that high level for a long time. And like you said, I think it's that there has to be a compelling why behind it. And usually that compelling why is, you know, betterment of other people. I don't really... I'm trying to embody that, because that's what a lot of people like Tony Robbins say. And so far it's worked. So I don't try and to understand how things work. I just do what works.
I like it. So what is your why? Is it what you said, the betterment of other people?
I tell my guys, we had like a goal seminar and I get to look.
I saw a little bit of that, by the way.
Yeah. Really, yeah. Cool. So I'm always like, think of like the thing that you struggle with most in your lifetime. Because number one, there's probably some technical skill that you use to get out of that thing. And you're probably very passionate about that. I guess I don't want to offend anybody, but like for some girls who were sexually assaulted, right? Like they want to help other people like that. Or somebody was a geek in high school. They want to help other people, not be that. For me, it's right. Like I see so many people like they drive, like Hawaii is a great place to live, but like, man, people drive like 2 hours every day one way just to like have like a decent big house where their kids can play in the yard. And because like the housing prices here are just ridiculous. There's no middle class here. I mean, in Hawaii, it's way more separated than on the U.S. mainland.
Right.
So the regular people, they're just trying to get by, and they have good jobs, which is the problem. And it's the Wall Street. It's Wall Street that's taking all like the gains, and the people are taking all the risks. And if they just got like one freaking single family home rental, that would unlock so much. Just one rental, right? And not saying they have to do it four more times, but just that one, just that peace of mind, that abundance mindset starts to set in.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I have people reach out to me. They're like, hey, I want to get into real estate, but I don't have the time, or I don't have the money, or I don't, it's like, you need to make it a priority. And, where there's a will, there's a way. And that even just doing one, like you said, will unlock it, even if that doesn't get them the cash flow they need to leave. And most times it won't, but that'll just like unlock a new part of the brain. And they'll be like, damn, I just created a whole nother source of income. I now have multiple streams of income.
Yeah. So you're kind of like me. You're kind of that tough love. And I'm always like, well, if you don't do anything, we know what's going to happen. You're going to 8% a year. You're going to work for another 40 years. Look at these other guys that are doing it. They're not the smartest people in the bunch.
Yeah, no, exactly. That was, been kind of my motivation at times. You look around, you're like, wait, if he could do it, I could definitely do it. Like, it's just kind of...
That one gets a lot of people.
Yeah. It's interesting. I think there's a lot of different ways we get motivated, but I think just like doing what you did at the beginning where you found a good mentor, you found a support system, you found like-minded people, and you were constantly working at it. I think that's another thing too, is like if people want to get into real estate or get into anything that they love in life, like taking that shift, that big shift from point A to point B, they need to be taking action daily or as often as they can toward that goal. Instead of just talking about it, they need to be doing.
Right. And the cash flow is, that's the simple part. The hard part is, what do you do after? What do you do after you have a few thousand dollars and you've kind of created this mousetrap? How do you start creating your lifestyle the way you want and then kind of make something bigger than just, pour all this cash flow to yourself?
Right.
That's the hard part.
So, so you moved out to Hawaii, but you still work a 9-to-5. Is that right?
Yeah.
So what makes you, do you really enjoy the job? What makes you continue working there? So I'm assuming you could probably leave if you wanted to.
Yeah. So the three big things of, when I look at people's jobs is like, do they like who they work with? I like who I work with. Do I like who I work for? Yeah, I like who I work for. And the third one is like, do you like what you do? I don't like what I do. I could care less. my running joke is like, yeah, if I stay at home all day, which I have, I'd probably just eat junk food and never change my clothes. And, just look at the real world, right? That's why they gave him a job with Jersey Shore. Like, because if they didn't work, they wouldn't party, right? There'd be no spice of life. But in all seriousness, there's a recession coming in next 1 to 3 years. You need to be investing off not pro forma and cash flow today. Now, you can go after some home run swings here and there. because I know you do that. You do the development stuff, which I think that there's definitely a place for that in your portfolio. But to me, I'm going to kind of hedge everything a second time with sort of the belt and suspenders as my day job. I'm going to keep it. And plus another thing, I don't have kids, so it's not like I do anything other than just play with my dog at home or something like that. Not like I could do anything better too.
Well, it seems like you're already having a massive impact with simple passive cash flow and investing in real estate and educating others, to kind of broaden their horizons and get into real estate.
Yeah.
And still carrying a full-time job. That's pretty impressive.
It can be done. I mean, it's just systems. It's just like, for most people, just coming home, just commit to doing that 1 to 2 hours every day. Right. That's, I think, where people get all messed up, is that they feel like they have to commit and they don't end up doing anything. If you're not, I work with passive investors. If you're needing to spend more than like 5 hours a week doing this stuff, you're doing it wrong. Like if you quit your job, first of all, a lot of my guys, their jobs pay pretty well, like $150,000 or more, right? So it's kind of hard to replace that salary.
Right.
What are you going to do? How much time can you spend being a passive investor? I mean, is
right. Yeah. I think if you take it up to the active level, then it may make sense at some point, but you're right. If you're truly a passive investor, then as long as you're getting a great return on your money and you like what you're doing and you like your job, then, it makes sense.
Right. Right. I mean, it's pretty simple. The average 40-year-old, he's probably got a few $100,000 in his 401k or in liquid, year one, go buy a turnkey rental. Year two, if you're making more money, and just go into a couple syndications and then just keep doing that for a few more years and you're financially free and five. I mean, pretty simple to me.
Yeah. So what is kind of your grand vision for your real estate investing and your website?
I mean, for me, I'm still trying to get to that $10,000 passive a month. I'm kind of coasting in there, that's kind of my plan. I was living in Seattle getting paid more, but for me, it was more about, let's just kind of coast in there, live my life how I want today, not have to wear a jacket every single day. And I think for me, it's, that was part of the reason for moving away from, I was living in a very affluent area in Seattle, and it's just like the whole, what am I, I'm going to get my next Tesla or whatever, Porsche or whatever. It's just hard to live because it's just constantly keeping up with the Joneses. So nice thing about Hawaii is everybody drives a Camry or whatever, a pretty modest car. And, it's a lot more family oriented out here, and I don't get caught up in the hustle and bustle, which is nice. So for me, it's all just going to work. Pretty simple life, pretty easy.
Well, I mean, you made that life. You were able to create what you wanted and live in Hawaii again. That's pretty awesome to be able to invest in real estate from Hawaii.
Right. Like one thing I did recently, I stopped doing a weekly podcast. I'm just going to do one or two a month whenever I something good happens. Right. Because I'm just trying to do less, live more, do less.
Live more, do less. I like it. So how far away are you from the beach?
I can probably get there in 10 minutes, but I never go.
I love it.
Yeah.
All right. So let's jump into the monumental questions. So what does success mean to you?
I would say success is choosing, if you think of life, the board game, defining the rules of the game first before you start playing. And that's where I found myself before I moved back home to Hawaii, is just kind of keep going, right? Keep going, 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 going. And this is even another pivot point happened when I was like more of an active multifamily investor. You know, I was just kind of following that logical progression. And I kind of got in touch with my why, did some goal seminars here and there, and figure out what I really wanted and define the rules of my game. Because the whole point is, if you don't define the rules of the game, you never win. To use another analogy, you know, everybody gets off the bus or the train at some point. Only the weirdos are standing at the end of the line that never get off. At some point, you just call it. You're good.
I like it. Do you have a morning ritual or a daily habit that contributes to a successful or a good day?
No, I don't. I wake up and I'm like 4 or 5 hours behind you guys, and I got like 50 emails I have to go through.
Barraged as soon as you wake up.
Yeah. I mean, I'm still working on that. Of course, I'd love to just wake up and meditate and then work out, but that's not happening, you know, with the day job. I got to get going. I'm working on that. But awareness is the first thing, step.
Yes, exactly. What is your favorite book or book you're currently reading?
I read Tom Wheelwright's Tax-Free Wealth. That was kind of neat recently. I don't really read too much books. I probably should. I'm not a really big book person. I read slow, so I don't get it very much. Yeah.
Well, at least you read Rich Dad Poor Dad.
If I give you one, I mean, for a new person, Millionaire Investor, I mean, that's pretty much the only book I think you should read. The rest is just go out and get it done. Go and do it and learn.
Millionaire Investor?
Yeah, by Gary Keller.
Right. Yeah, I've read that book.
I'm in this other mastermind. A lot of people read books and they don't really go anywhere. That's just my thought. That's just my observation from that cohort.
Yeah.
And I think if you're going to read a book, there definitely has to be an action plan behind it. If not, you just, you know, it was just shell is the term.
Yeah. I am actually kind of going through that same thought process myself right now, because I'm reading this Dean Graziosi Millionaire Success Habits right now, and I've taken it to heart, exactly what you're saying. I even find myself victim of that sometimes, where I'm like, I read a book and I'm like, oh man, that book was so great, and then I'm already busy reading the next book that I forget to implement what I learned from the first book.
Right.
I've taken that to heart, and like even just today, I think I have like 12 pages of notes of just things that I'm taking what he says and applying it directly to my life now, of things that I want to implement or things that I'm going to change.
Yeah. I mean, things that when I do read something, I don't write notes. I write action items and habit changes.
Yeah. I agree.
Because I don't know where people always use this example. Like, you know, the guy, the really successful guy, he'll go to a seminar, he'll go for 15 minutes, get one action item, and he'll leave. And he'll say it's good, as opposed to staying the whole 3-4 days. What point is it to feel good about yourself and read a book if you nothing, there's no change?
Yeah. So all right, so everybody listening.
That's just the way I justify for not reading books.
Yeah, either way you look at it. But no, I think that's a good point. Everybody listening, make sure you are actually taking action from what you're reading and don't just passively read.
Right.
All right. So in closing, Lane, is there a way people can reach out to you or follow you?
If you guys want to, you know, if you're just kind of starting out or more of a passive investor, my investing blog and podcast is Simple Passive Cash Flow. Website is simplepassivecashflow.com, and email is lane@simplepassivecashflow.com, coincidentally. And it was nice chatting with you, Evan.
Likewise. This is great, Lane. Thank you. All right. What did you guys think of today's show with Lane? I really had a blast sitting down with Lane and learning his story of how he went from, you know, the brainwashed corporate American job buying the house to now owning and investing in over 2,100 units. And it shows that really anybody can get into real estate or really make whatever their passion is come true. And real estate can be a vehicle to make that happen. So if you enjoyed today's episode, please give us a shout out on social media. Let your friends know you're listening. You know, send us a message if you enjoyed it. You know, let us know what specifically you're enjoying. And with that, have a monumental day.